Friday. Sorry, it's just one of those things again. It happens. One day we'll get over it. Okay, I need to get over it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. You're on this road with me. Hi, welcome to the whole thing with the shebang with the folks from GeekRadioDaily.com. We're on Facebook and all the other things. It is Anti-Friday, August 19th, and the folks that are bringing it to you today, well, the lady that's ready to rip everybody up to get ready for school, that there is the Flintstress.
This is Thunderdome. Death is listening, and we'll take the first man that screams.
That's how we're attending.
That'd be a great, like, opening first day right. Monologue.
Just do that. Make that happen. Hi, everybody. I'm the wonderful Billy Flynn.
I thought you were the ultimate rebel. I actually looked up to you, and you're nothing but a simple dick.
I'm not that simple. What happened to you?
No, you're a complicated dick. In 1791, African-American astronomer and mathematician Benjamin Banneker sends a copy of his first almanac to Thomas Jefferson to disprove Jefferson's belief that black were intellectually inferior to whites. You know, a lot of people, like, look up Thomas Jefferson. Dude's kind of a dick. Complicated dick.
No, he was the simple one. 1839, Louis-Jacques Mandet Daguerre freely releases a manual for his daguerreotype photographic process, the first process to allow an image to be chemically fixed into a permanent picture.
In 1887, Dmitri Ivanovich Mendeleev uses a balloon to ascend above cloud cover to an altitude of 11,500 feet.
Wow.
Yikes. 3.5 kilometers in order to observe an eclipse in Russia. It's his very first flight ever, and he doesn't pay attention to, like, trying to control the balloon until after he's completed his observations, at which that time he decides to try to, like, work out how to land. And this is the dude who will later be known for ordering the elements of the periodic table.
Oh, sure. Good for you, dude. 1891, William Huggins first describes the astronomical application of spectrum.
It's all about Huggins. In 1929, John Logie Baird transmits a commercially made film, The Bride, a monologue by the comedian George Robey from his studio in Long Acre, London.
1950, the tradition of Saturday morning television for children begins in the United States. ABC kicks it off with Acrobat Ranch and Animal Clinic.
Classics. In 1960, the Soviet Union launches Sputnik 5 satellite into Earth orbit with two dogs named Belka, which is Russian for squirrel, and Strelka, little arrow, along with a gray rabbit, 40 mice, two rats, flies, fruit flies to be specific, right, and a variety of plants. After a safe round trip in space, the creatures will become the first living organisms to return from space after a day in orbit.
Let's not ask how many other creatures went up. The Yankee Atomic Electric Company's $57 million plant in Roe, Massachusetts on the Deerfield River becomes the first commercial atomic energy reactor and the third in the U.S. to achieve self-sustaining nuclear reaction.
Well, good for us. In 1964, SINCOM 3, which becomes the first satellite placed into geostationary orbit, is launched on the Delta D rocket. It will be used to telecast the 1964 Summer Olympics in Tokyo to the U.S. It's the first television program ever to cross the Pacific Ocean. It's kind of cool.
1998, air traffic control over a wide New England area blacks out due to a computer crash
and
at the
not
Federal
a power
Aviation
plant.
Administration's Boston Center.
In 2004, an article in the journal Nature reveals that five new satellites and a further candidate moon have been discovered orbiting the planet Neptune, bringing its total number of satellites to 13.
2005, the ESA/NASA SOHO spacecraft discovers its milestone 1,000th comet.
Woo! In 2008, the Advanced Cell Technology Company announces it has successfully created the first functional red blood cells grown in a lab.
Blah. Birthdays?
China Clugston is 44, the illustrator of Bloodletting, Hopeless Savages, Strange Town, Legion of Superheroes in the 31st century.
Matthew Perry is 50, from Second Chance / Boys Will Be Boys, A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon, Sydney, Friends,
oh, yeah.
Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, and The Odd Couple.
Kara Sedgwick is 54, born on the 4th of July. Not actually born on the 4th of July. She was born on, guess what, August 19th.
Oh.
From the movie Phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
And Batman, Mystery of the Batwoman, and Justice League, The New Frontier, and The Closer, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh, she's so funny on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Kevin Dillon is 54 from Heaven Help Us, The Blob, The Doors, Entourage, and Poseidon.
John Stamos is 56, Never Too Young to Die, You Again, Full House, Jake in Progress, ER, Grandfathered, Scream Queens, and You.
Me? Adam Arkin is 63 from Full Moon High and Northern Exposure, Chicago Hope, Halloween, H2O, 20 years later, and of course, Lake Placid.
Peter Gallagher is 64 from The Player, Bob Roberts, Hudsucker Proxy, House on Haunted Hill, Mr. Deeds, and A Bad Mom's Christmas.
Jonathan Frakes is 67 from Star Trek The Next Generation, Camp Nowhere, Gargoyles, Beyond Belief, Factor Fiction, and the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon.
Gerald McRaney is 71 from Simon and Simon, recent Chabby.
Huh? How about that?
Never Ending Story, Major Dad, Deadwood, Jericho, and the A-Team.
Jill St. John is 79 from The Lost World, Molly in Batman 66, Tiffany Case in Diamonds Are Forever, and Brenda Starr in the 1967 version. And then, of course, that 89 miniseries of Around the World Maybe Days.
Diana Muldar is 81. McCloud, the underappreciated Dr. Pulaski on Star Trek Next Generation, L.A. Law, and Dr. Leslie Tompkins on Batman the Animated Series.
No longer with us, born in 1646, John Flamsteed made the first recorded observations of Uranus, although he mistakenly cataloged it as a star.
Well, he saw something. Born in 1871, Orville Wright, American engineer and pilot, co-founded the Wright Company.
1906, Philo Farnsworth, American inventor, invented the Fusor. Not the TV, really.
No. In 1921, Gene Roddenberry brought us Genesis 2, the Questor tapes, Earth, Final Conflict, Andromeda. And, oh yeah, Star Trek.
I've heard of that. 1942, Fred Thompson from No Way Out, Die Hard 2, Necessary Roughness, Cape Fear, Sinister, and Law and Order.
Maybe that'll be on TV. Probably somewhere. CBS, we get a rerun of The Neighborhood, BBT, you know, Big Bang Theory, Mom, Carpool Karaoke, When Corden Met McCartney, live from Liverpool. A rerun. Wow, all reruns.
If there's traffic, though, that's just going to look really
true.
Good. ABC is a two-hour Bachelorette and a new Grand Hotel. Something happens.
NBC has American Ninja Warrior and Dateline.
Fox, there's a new Beat Shazam, and so you think you can dance?
On the CW, there's the new Penn and Teller Fool Us and Who's Line, and then I Ship It.
Freeform will be showing The Princess and the Frog.
AMC, the inhabitants of Terminal Island must find a new place to live after they are removed from their homes in the wake of Pearl Harbor on a new The Terror.
Bravo, Captain Sandy discovers that one of the crew members' positions is redundant, which sparks Colin to make a bold move on a new Below Deck Mediterranean.
FX is showing Passengers.
FXX, The Simpsons Marathon, you got your Treehouse of Horror 13, Helter Shelter, and Special Edna.
On FXM, they have The Other Woman.
NGC, America's Lost Treasures, on a new Drain the Ocean. Do it, National Geographic.
No, on BBC America, Gladiator.
Sundance has the 2013 carry, followed by the 1976 carry.
Scared the crap out of me. Woo! Sci-fi Hunger Games.
TBS has a new episode of American Dad. Then, the crew is presented with a unique opportunity when they travel through time on Final Space.
TNT has Horrible Bosses and Horrible Bosses 2, which I don't remember them making, but okay.
And USA WWE Monday Night Raw. But tonight we're watching the Hallmark Channel because a fading female pop star moves to suburban Ohio and lies low as she teaches music to a talented group of kids who don't fit in. Oh. And she helps them realize their potential. She realizes that fame isn't everything. Deborah Gibson and Robert Gantz star in Summer of Dreams.
The wonderful Billy Flynn looks at what Chad and Abby are up to now. If you know what TV show they're on this week, you could win yourself a prize. It's your Further Adventures of Chad and Abby update. Chad arrives at summer camp. Are you ready for the summer? He then becomes popular with some of the other campers. Brady forces Chad and Stefan to join a secret club along with him and Xander, a guy who can hock a loogie 8 feet in the air and catch it on his tongue. As part of the club's initiation, Stefan and Chad go to steal something from the girls' cabin. But not like they did in Revenge of the Nerds. In a rush to avoid getting caught, Chad takes and then accidentally breaks Lonnie's glasses. Watch out, Chad. That sister is bold and beautiful. Sister, hashtag Chabby forever.
No blasted lettuce today!
No, and that's okay because apparently we stumped a bunch of people last week, and I wasn't really expecting that. Last week, Chad and Abby happened to be upon L.A. Law is where they were. See? And it was so great because on
Friday...
Those
law procedurals can kind of all
they do. I know, together. But I did mention the butterfly on the very first day. So, hey, folks, learn your butterfly. If you'd like to drop a note about where they are today or what you've been doing or what you're going to be doing, it's coming up soon.
Do it.
However you say that, by all means, drop a note to podcast@geekradiodaily.com. Of course, you can tell us all about it in voicemail simply by dialing
510-GRD-CREW.
I mean, we can change the names to protect the not-so-innocent.
Do you like movies? Well, let me make you an offer that you can't refuse. Have you ever found yourself standing at the local Cineplex with that smell of freshly buttered popcorn wafting through your nostrils, wondering if that new Hugh Jackman movie is really worth your time? Or have you ever lamented about that time you spent scouring the vast expanse of the internet for movie and DVD release dates when, let's be honest, you'd rather be leveling up your Troll Hunter, working on the Great American Novel, or even watching kitten videos? Oh yes, I said kitten videos. I will do the work for you. All I ask is 15 to 30 minutes of your time every Tuesday. My name is Michael Faulkner, and every Tuesday is showtime at the Weekly Podioplex, your audio guide to what's new at the box office, how the top 10 fared over the weekend, and what's coming to your home theater on DVD and Blu-ray. You can find the Weekly Podioplex on the Chronic Rift Network at www.chronicrift.com, along with a plethora of other podcasts that explore the culture in pop culture. The Weekly Podioplex, brought to you by the Chronic Rift. Thanks for listening. We'll see you at the theater.
That's a wrap!
Hi, I'm Trace Palou from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Hi, this is Frank Conniff, also from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
And you're listening to what again? What are you listening to?
I believe this show is called Geek Radio Daily. Radio Geek Daily, Daily Geek Radio Thing, thing that's a Radio Geek show.
Nah.
Whatever it is, you can call it whatever you want, and you are lucky enough to be listening to
it. Who would name a thing like that?
I don't know. It's a crazy name for a show. The kids today with the crazy names that they come up with. I don't get it.
Just push the button, Frank.
Okay.
Indeed you are. And if you can't trust those gentlemen, well, I'm not sure who you can trust at all. Welcome back to it. It's time for us to find out some info. Like what people saw this weekend, huh?
This week's 10, last week's 6, The Art of Racing in the Rain made $4 million. It's made like almost $17 million.
This week's 9 is new, Blinded by the Light made $4.4
million.
Another roller in the night.
This week's 8, last week's 5, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood made another $7.6 million. It's made $114 in 4 weeks.
Still need to see that. This week's 7, last week's 4, Dora and the Lost City of Gold, 8.5. It's made $33 million in 2 weeks on a $49 million budget. Not doing so good, Dora.
Nope.
Ask the map.
Maybe she's got more money in. Backpack. This week, 6 was new. 47 Meters Down Uncaged made $9 million. Yeah.
But it didn't make its budget back.
Nope.
It's the first time one of these cheap horror movies has it in the first week, right?
Check out our feed. Carol the Cat, Cinemetrist, did a review.
Indeed. And I can't wait to hear it. This week's 5, last week's 2, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Another $10 million. It's made $40 million in 2 weeks on a 25 budget.
This week's 4 was new. Oh, not anywhere close to near the top. The Angry Birds movie 2 made $10 million, right? On a $65 million budget on a movie based on a mobile.
This week's 3 is last week's 3. The Lion King makes almost $12 million this week. It's made almost $500 million in 5 weeks.
This week's 2, last week's 1, Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. What do you call it? Fast and the Franchise. Hobbs and Shaw made $14.1 million. It's made like 134, but it didn't make its budget back. They gave them $200 million to make that movie.
The number one movie in America, kind of surprising a lot of people, is Good Boys, making $21 million on a budget of $20 million. So
wow.
Someone's gonna get a raise for that.
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Geek news.
Take a look at the world from a geeky point of view. Kevin Smith, my personal hero, and you probably know him from Jay and Silent Bob, is helming a new He-Man anime series for Netflix titled Masters of the Universe Revelation.
Is the revelation that Prince Adam is Jay on Ritalin?
Make a lot of sense. Masters of the Universe Revelation will pick up where the original series cartoon left off. The sequel series was revealed by Kevin Smith at his panel at PowerCon.
Answering all the unanswered questions.
There's so many. He is going to be the showrunner, said so himself. Powerhouse Animation, the people behind Netflix's Castlevania series, is going to do the show. They've got the whole thing. They're going to be tackling the new series.
So what, 4 episodes of a 2-year wait and then season 2?
If it's that good. A Radical Return to Eternia Revelation is a direct sequel series to the classic era of Masters of the Universe, the synopsis says. After a ferocious final battle, Forever fractures her Eternia. It's up to Tila to solve the mystery of the missing Sword of Power. In a race against time to prevent the end of the universe, her journey will uncover the secrets of Grayskull at last. because it's been a while. This is the epic He-Man and the Masters of the Universe saga fans have waited 35 years to see.
Wow, more than Secret of the Sword?
Following Smith's initial announcement at the convention, Netflix shared the official poster for Revelation on Twitter, and the streaming giant teases an epic tale featuring what, quote, may be the He-Man and Skeletor final battle.
Wow.
By the power of Grayskull, I have the Snoochie Poochies!
Well, this Friday was the 42nd anniversary of Elvis Presley's death.
42nd anniversary of him going home, you mean?
Well, you might have expected some concerts in his honor, maybe the typical, you know, marathon of his movies on TV. But if you had said, what should happen is Elvis gets an animated TV show about him being a government spy, I would say, you know, you're ridiculous. And when can I see it?
And is it a sequel to Bubba Hotep?
Right. Netflix has announced that we're getting a series called Agent King, and it comes from Priscilla Presley and John Eddy.
Oh, there you are, Elvis.
The insane synopsis goes, Elvis Presley trades in his white jumpsuit for a jetpack when he is covertly inducted into a secret government spy program to help battle the dark forces that threaten the country he loves, all while holding down his day job as the king of rock and roll.
So it's Hannah Montana if she was Kim Possible.
Yeah. For the time that Elvis was a young boy, he always dreamed of being a superhero, fighting crime and saving the world. So Agent King lets him do just that, says Priscilla Presley. He did like law enforcement, was a deputy in a few places. You remember that episode of Drunk History?
Yep.
Yeah. Which would be a great cover for a secret agent. I mean, right? And if some of his rock and roll compatriots were agents as well, then I think you have the best prequel for a Kingsman you could ever imagine.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning creator of Mouse, which every person on this planet should read, Art Spiegelman, was going to be writing an introduction for a new Marvel collection, Marvel the Golden Age 39 to 49, but pulled his work after Marvel wanted him to remove a disparaging reference to Donald Trump.
I think we could agree the expert should be listened to.
Spiegelman wrote an essay discussing the political background of Marvel's offerings during and right after World War II and referenced Trump in comparison to Nazism, saying, in today's all-too-real world, Captain America's most nefarious villain, the Red Skull, is alive on screen, and an orange skull haunts America, which some people see as a reference to Donald Trump.
He could just as easily be talking about Carrot Top.
That's true. In response, the Folio Society, who was handling publishing on this collection, asked Spiegelman to remove the topical reference, claiming Marvel was trying to be apolitical, which is odd, considering the book in question explicitly covers the relationship between Marvel's output and the rise of early 20th century fascism.
It's a pretty political thing.
It's a book that's got Captain America punching Hitler in the face. I mean, it's where Spiegelman points out Jewish creators created heroes specifically as anti-fascist in posture and action, but he's pulled it from the collection, but you can find a link for his essay in the shows.
Sheesh. Well, wait till someone calls the Clan Dad when they republish that run of Jungle Action.
God. Another big consideration is that Spiegelman himself says there's a big, huge relationship between Marvel Entertainment and the Trump administration. He writes that Isaac Ike Perlmutter, chairman of Marvel, is a longtime friend of Donald Trump's, an unofficial and influential advisor, and a member of Mar-a-Lago, the Palm Beach, Florida golf place. He further writes that Perlmutter and his wife each recently donated $360,000, maximum allowed, to the Orange Skulls, Trump Victory Joint Fundraising Committee for 2020.
Which makes Marvel apolitical. How?
Spiegelman being chose to write the introduction to a collection like this makes sense, as the era in question is one he understands on a very deep level, which Mouse makes incredibly clear. Unfortunately for Marvel, it seems that Spiegelman understands the politics of that era, and this one just a little bit better than Marvel wanted him to. So look, Marvel, you're making a ton of money off of characters created to fight people who believe in master races, subjugating people, and making themselves a freaking emperor. They were created by people who fought those beliefs as well. Stan would have let the essay stand. You should apologize. Enough said.
Well, interesting, the star of the most celebrated car chase in film history, the 1968 Bullitt Mustang GT, driven like a bat out of hell by Steve McQueen over the streets of San Francisco, is going on the auction block.
Oh, that would go great with my 1970 Vanishing Point Dodge Challenger.
Yeah. Mecum Auctions announced that the iconic car will be offered for sale during the world's largest collector car auction in January in Kissimmee, Florida. It's likely to go for maybe millions of dollars.
I hear a stuntman named Mike is interested in.
McQueen's muscle car was long thought to be lost and rusting away in some forgotten junkyard, but in 2017, nearly a half century after it disappeared, it resurfaced.
A zombie car?
Well, actually, it was never lost. It was just kept a low profile. Oh. It's kind of interesting. In 74, a New Jersey insurance executive, Robert Kiernan, was shocked to see the car offered in a classified ad in a Road and Track magazine. The 390 horsepower V8 in Ford's Highland Green paint still had the original movie camera mounts and a hole in the trunk for a smoke machine. He paid $6,000 so he could use the souped up piece of cinematic history as his daily driver. Yeah. McQueen eventually tracked him down and twice tried to buy it back, but Robert Kiernan wasn't interested.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Someone said no to Steve McQueen? I want to see a movie about that.
Right? Kiernan drove the Mustang for about 6 years, adding 30,000 miles to the odometer before the clutch gave out in 1980. He then retired it to a garage on the family's property. He died in 2014 and never drove it again. And now that the film's making his 50th anniversary, his son decided to, you know, restore the car, and it could be yours in January. Warning, though, when you drive, you will continuously pass the same green VW Beetle.
And what's Monday without sad notes? Richard Williams, the legendary animator and three-time Oscar winner behind Who Framed Roger Rabbit, two of the Pink Panther films, and a bunch of other things you love, has passed away.
Oh.
According to his family, he died in Bristol at home at age 86. Williams, born in Toronto, was a brilliant animator, began his career in the 50s, earning his first Oscar for an animated adaptation of A Christmas Carol in 71, went on to win two more with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you know, something that combines animation and live action Disney in a way that works so well. It's mesmerizing, and it's just stands out to this day.
It really was great.
He's also known for The Thief and the Cobbler, a famous unfinished hand-animated adaptation of Arabian Nights, and, of course, the book, The Animator's Survival Kit, written by him, which is considered a must-have resource in the animation industry, and anyone you love that's ever drawn anything probably has that book on their shelves.
Wow.
With his work, he influenced an entire generation of animators. So we thank you, sir. We will miss you, sir, because, wow, you left us with a lot. GRD is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Non-Derivative Works United States 3.0 license. Come check us out on Facebook and on Twitter and stop by the website at geekradiodaily.com. It's a fun thing to do. And like, you know, you said, you know, the cat lady, she's got a thing there. You should go and listen to it because it's about something you want to know. Do I really want to see that damn shark movie? You know you do.
Yeah.
You know you kind of do.
You love a good shark movie.
It's just it. I love a good shark movie. Find out. That's what you do. Drop us a note, won't you please? It's podcast at geekradiodaily.com, or you can leave us any kind of message you want by dialing
510-GRD-CROW.
And we will see you some other time.
Well, we have nothing big and flashy to show you this week.
Blah, 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 blah.
Welcome to Nerd School. Nerd.
I don't know if you noticed, but the podcast was a disaster.
Aren't you a little out of place here and everywhere else on Earth?
Yep. Oh.
Son, I think it's time you and I had a little talk. I got a call from your math teacher yesterday. She says that you were drawing horses in your math book.
Unicorns. They're unicorns.
What?
Nothing.
She also says that you haven't been turning in your homework on time. And I'm very disappointed that you didn't even try out for the swimming team. As to those riding lessons you wanted, you say you love horses, and yet you seem to be afraid to get on a real one. Now, Bastion, you're old enough to get your head down out of the clouds and start keeping both feet on the ground, right?
Okay.
Stop daydreaming. Start facing your problems, okay?
Okay.
Okay. There. I think we've had a nice talk. We should have more. You have a good day, son. Don't be late for school again.